the temperature anisotropies. So we introduced a quantity that you've all seen before, the distribution function. So this is photons. That means we just have a Bose-Einstein distribution of energies at a given temperature. And then if we have a totally homogeneous universe, then that's the end of the story. And we could do things like derive the energy density in photons or the number density, stuff like that. But of course, we live in an inhomogeneous universe. So the way that we parameterize that is through this function theta. So that just appears in the distribution function here. I think I might have written this on the board incorrectly yesterday, because I think it was t plus theta, but let's define it this way. Apologies for that. So theta, we argued if it's really just an anisotropic temperature and it isn't an anisotropic distortion of the black body spectrum, that this function theta can be a function in general of position, time, and the direction with which these photons are coming to us. Okay. And our goal, so this is generally defined. I could be here and look at what the distribution function is and walk over to the other side of the room and ask what the distribution function is and wait 10 billion years and ask what the distribution function is, but we don't see any of that. We want to evaluate this here and now. Okay, so the goal is to calculate this quantity at the present day epoch in the universe, okay, at a given position. And that's going to be a function of the direction with which the photons are coming to us. So this is really delta t over t as a function of angles on our sky. And that's what we want. So the way to get it was to evaluate the Boltzmann equation, because that's going to tell us how this distribution function, which counts the number density of stuff in phase space, so the number density of photons in phase space, evolves with time. Okay, and if there are no interactions, then it doesn't. That's a statement of Liouville's theorem, that the phase space volume is just conserved unless there's something that changes the total number of photons. And the thing that will change the total number of photons in a given block of phase space is when there are interactions. So we called this the collisional Boltzmann equation. And if that's zero, it's the collisionless Boltzmann equation. So we were about halfway there. So here's the last thing that I wrote down yesterday. So we expanded this total derivative of f with respect to time in terms of a partial derivative of f with respect to time. This is the piece of d xi dt that survived, because we argued that this piece is going to be first order. So we had to keep the zeroth order piece here. This thing here was what used to be dp dt, I believe. This, as I said, was dxi dt. Okay, so this is the thing that told us how, I think that was actually 1 over p dp dt. So this is the thing that told us how the momenta of photons will evolve in our expanding universe. So we had this factor of h. That's the redshift due to the expansion of the universe. We had d phi dt. That's a redshift that would be experienced if a photon is moving through and evolving a time-evolving potential. And then we had d psi dx. That's the redshift that would be experienced if a photon is traversing a gradient in the potential. So that's the equation. Our goal is to now finish this derivation. Sorry, just to make that a little bit clearer. That's that. Okay, so our goal today is to finish this derivation, and then we will move on to discuss how all of these different quantities actually evolve in time. We'll derive a set of equations that tell us how they evolve in time. Okay, so We can expand the distribution function I have written there to first order. So this is just a Taylor expansion where I've traded, so we're expanding around theta equals zero, okay, where I've sort of traded the normal derivative df d theta, where theta is evaluated at zero, for this here, and you can check that that's true, that p df zero dp is just df d theta, where theta goes to zero. So that's just convenient because you can see I've got this p df dp here, and so that's going to end up simplifying our life a little bit. Okay, where f0 is just the distribution function evaluated for theta equals zero. So that's just the pure Bose-Einstein distribution function. Okay. So we can put this in here. So the zeroth order distribution function is just going to be a function of t, the temperature, which is a function of time and the momentum. Okay, just the magnitude of the momentum, not the direction. So let's look at what the zeroth order piece is. So I can substitute this in here. And the zeroth order piece is, well, I've got a contribution here, so I've got a partial f partial t. That's we can rewrite this as partial f partial t is just partial temperature partial t partial f partial temperature. So that's not going to be zero because the distribution function is a function of temperature. And here I've got a df dp. That's a first order thing, so I throw it away. That's a first order thing, so I throw it away. And the only zeroth order piece I have is the h. So we've got hp df dp, okay. So this guy, what do I want to do with that? Okay, so we have these two pieces that we need to worry about. So let's take this, and now I'm going to do this. So we have dt, dt, df, dt, and then I've got a minus p, df, 0, dp times h, okay. Sorry, that's a temperature. And that equals zero. Okay, so now now we can evaluate this guy. Okay, so that's just this Bose-Einstein distribution, 1 over e to the minus p over t minus 1. In fact, we could probably do one thing extra to simplify our life, which is to take this piece and rewrite it in terms of df0 dp. So this guy here, we've got negative 1 over t dt dt times p df0 dp, and then we've got minus p df0 dp times h. That just follows because we have this exponential here. Okay, so the derivatives are rather simple. And now we can factor out the p df0 dp. So that's going to be negative 1 over t. dt, dt, and then we've got minus h, so that's 1 over a, dA, dt, and this has to equal 0. So from this, we learn that 1 over t, dt, dt, has to be equal to negative 1 over a, dA, dt. Yeah?
Why is that side equal 0?
So it's 0 with order. We just get from the Boltzmann equation this piece, which turned into that. And then we have this piece on h, which turned into that. And at 0 with order, there are no interactions. So that's 0. So the only thing that would cause an interaction would be a potential or an inhomogeneity if it's just a totally smooth homogeneous universe and I have a totally homogeneous distribution function, that means there's no interactions. So at 0 with order, there's no interactions. Okay, so at 0 with order, what we learned from the Boltzmann equation is that t has to be proportional to 1 over a. So if I substitute that in here, then this will be satisfied. So that means, as we know, that in an expanding universe, the temperature decreases as the universe expands, like 1 over a. So we can play a similar trick here and rewrite all the partial derivatives of f with respect to different quantities as partial derivatives of f with respect to p, and use that expansion there to show that at first order, we'll get something that looks like this. So we'll get that the Boltzmann equation, df dt, is p df 0 dp. Okay, so I can always, so I substitute in for f, you can see that I'm going to get, multiplying theta everywhere, this factor of p df 0 dp. And, well, I've got that piece there, which I'll end up expanding, the p df 0 dp. I've got any other factors here, which will also end up giving me something proportional to this. And so the types of pieces that I get are, first of all, we've got d theta dt. That just came from the partial f partial t piece, the first order piece. We've got a p hat over a d theta dx piece. That came from the second guy. We've got a d phi dt piece. So the h entered at the 0 with order. So then now at the first order, we've got the d phi dt. We're keeping that. And finally, we have the other term up there, which was p hat I over a d psi dx I. So that's it. So if this were equal to 0, if there were no interactions, then we could set everything inside the brackets equal to 0. And you can see that what I've done is extracted an evolution equation for theta, which was our goal. So what are the different pieces in here? So first of all, we have this guy over here, which is gravity. So we're gonna shift our distribution function around because of gravity whenever there is a time varying or a spatially varying potential. And so you'll note that this doesn't change the momentum of the particles, it just changes the direction. So So it's only a function of p hat. It changes the momentum of everything democratically, right? So it just changes the zeroth order piece. So then we have here these two pieces, which are independent of gravity. So this is just coming from the photons evolving on their merry way. And it will tell us, due to that, basically what is going to happen to theta as a function of time and space. So now let me digress for a second and just introduce some definitions that will be helpful for us in a few minutes. But before I do that, are there any questions on this guy? So effectively, the Boltzmann equation is just a trick for deriving our equation for theta. Okay, so one. We're going to work in Fourier space. Okay. When you do linear theory, that means that all the Fourier modes are decoupled because in your equations, you only ever have terms that are linear in these quantities. So if I do a Fourier transform, there's no mode mixing. There's no mixing between different k's. So we're going to expand theta as an integral d cubed k, 2 pi cubed, e to the I k dot x times theta, which will now be a function of k. And similarly, we're going to expand phi and psi in the same way. So when we do that, we can substitute back in here, and we'll find that in Fourier space, we're going to have dfdt is negative p, and we probably also want to go to conformal time. So recall that when we started on this journey, I wanted to use the proper time briefly. So now we're going to go back to conformal time. So this is going to turn into negative p df0 dp times d theta dt, where now it should be understood that theta is a function of k. So we're in Fourier space. The spatial derivative here, acting on theta, is going to bring down an ik, but only in the ith direction. So we'll get a ik. And here we've got a p hat I. So this is really going to be ik dot p hat, whatever direction I have in p. And that's going to multiply theta. And then we have these potential terms. So we've got d phi. I advertised I was going to go to conformal time. So I've got d phi, d psi, and then again, that spatial derivative, which I have over there, will bring down a k dot p hat, and I will have psi. Okay, so this is what we have now in Fourier space and conformal time, which will be our variables of choice. So a definition we can make is, so the only place that the direction is going to enter now in Fourier space is through this dot product of k with p. So let's think about what we've done. We're talking about plane waves. So this is a space-space diagram. So these plane waves are going to have a preferred direction, right? So we'll define some unit vector k hat. And if I have photons that are coming from a given direction, p hat, then I can define everything in terms of some angle between them, theta kp. So we're going to define mu as k dot p over the magnitude of k. Yeah?
Can I just clarify, is that df d eta conformal type on the left, or is it df dt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so here we'd have a df d eta at the price of adding a factor of the scale factor.
What happens to the scale factors on the other side?
So the scale factors on the other side got eliminated when I went from t to eta.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have here a, so a d eta is equal to dt. So I'll get a 1 over a here.
Yeah.
I'll get a 1 over a here.
Yeah.
So then the a can come out the front. So I'll get a 1 over a. Out of
so
everything.
You won't have an A there.
So then I won't have an A there, thanks. Yeah. So mu is just the cosine of the angle between K and P, right? So now I can stick that definition in here, wherever I have a K hat, P hat. We can replace that by the magnitude of k times mu. So in Fourier space, that's kind of nice. Theta is not going to depend on two angles, but it's only going to depend on the relative angle between k and p hat. So if that's true, we have this in Fourier space. We have this azimuthal symmetry. And there's a rather nice expansion for functions that have azimuthal symmetry, which you might recall, which is to expand things in terms of Legendre functions. So another thing that's going to be useful for us is to take theta, which is a function of k and mu, and expand it in terms of these Legendre functions. So we've got negative I to the L, that's just a definition, 2L plus 1 PL of mu. times these theta L's, which are now just a function of the magnitude of the momentum. And we can define an inverse transform. So if we want to figure out what theta L of k is, this is just going to be 1 over negative I to the L, the integral from negative 1 to 1, d mu over 2, pl of mu times theta as a function of mu and k. So these theta L's will sometimes be referred to as moments of the distribution function. And we'll see that this is convenient because various quantities will just depend on different moments of the distribution function. So for example, let's ask what theta 0 is. So theta 0 of k is just this integral from negative 1 to 1 d mu over 2 times theta. If I recall that mu is just the cosine of an angle, then this, if I add an extra integral over phi, is just the angular average of theta. So theta 0 is just the average overall, the average anisotropy seen by any given observer at a given point in space and time. Theta 1 is going to be the dipole seen by an observer at any point in space and time, theta 2 the quadrupole, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, that's kind of nice because you can forecast in the future that we are going to be interested in a multipole expansion of delta t over t. And so these moments are going to be really useful. Okay. So continuing on our path of making convenience definitions. So we're going to define the total density of matter, be that dark matter or baryons, as a fractional over density. Okay. So just like there, theta is a fractional temperature difference, we're going to define our perturbations in matter as a fractional density perturbation. Okay. Actually, why don't we come back to this in a second? That's not really going to be very clear. Okay, so we have these definitions for the photons, and we have this Boltzmann equation for the photons. So let's concentrate on the photons before we go talk about the matter. So this, in the absence of collisions, is equal to zero, but really, there are collisions. So we should worry about what we can put on the right-hand side. So the important thing to consider is the interaction between electrons and photons. So in the early universe, the universe is totally ionized. And of course, photons interact with charged particles. So if I go back early enough in time, it's certainly true that I should not neglect interactions, right? So there will be a lot of interactions. They will be strong interactions, and I should take them into account. So the cross section in the limit where the electrons are non-relativistic, which will basically be the limit that we're interested in. So in that limit, the cross section is just given by the Thomson cross section. So that's 8 pi times the fine structure constant squared over 3 times the mass of the electron squared. And just to give you a sense for the numbers, this is something like 7 times 10 to the minus 25 inverse centimeter squared. So electrons are relevant and not protons because the mass of a proton is far greater than the mass of an electron. So the cross section for photons scattering off of protons is much smaller than that of photons scattering off of electrons. Okay? So what happens? Brief history. You've got Compton scattering, and the mean free path between scattering events is going to roughly go like 1 over the number density times the cross section. Okay. So this is telling me how far a photon can travel before it ends up interacting with an electron. And the number density of electrons is going like 1 over a cubed. So just like the density, the energy density of matter redshifts like 1 over a cubed, the number density of matter is also going to redshift like 1 over a cubed. So this guy here, the mean free path, is going to go like a cubed over this Thomson cross section. So the mean free path, as I go earlier and earlier in the universe, is getting smaller and smaller. So hence, in the early universe, Compton scattering is really efficient at scattering off of charged particles, and it's going to prevent those charged particles from recombining to form neutral atoms. So that's why you don't have neutral hydrogen in the early universe, because this is so efficient that it's constantly just ionizing everything. Okay. So the mean free path goes to zero in the early universe. But eventually, it's going to start getting large, and these interactions between photons and electrons are going to become rare. So when the mean free path is roughly bigger than the inverse horizon size, or the, you can think, since photons are traveling at the speed of light, the mean free time between interactions becomes less than a Hubble time, then these events will happen so infrequently that now neutral atoms can form because the electrons can find their protons and there won't be a photon to screw that up in roughly a Hubble time. Okay, so after this time, then we can neglect these terms that would come from Compton scattering, and then we can set the right-hand side to zero, but not before then. So what is the right-hand side? So this collisional term because I really want to get to CMB and phenomenology, I won't derive it for you, I will just give it to you. But you can find a nice derivation in chapter 4 of Dottolson. So this collisional term, again, we can play some tricks and factor out this P df dp so that we can set it equal to what we have on the left-hand side over there. So this is P df dp. And then we have this term here, which tells us something about the mean free path of the photons. So we've got this number density times the Thomson cross-section. That tells us how rare these various collisions will be. And this guy depends on the average, so the zeroth moment that we defined up there. So it's the average temperature seen at a given point in space and time. And then we've got theta. And finally, we've got a term that has to do with the velocity of the things the photons interact with, which generically we'll call baryons. So that means electrons, protons, everything else, but for all intents and purposes, it's going to be electrons. So this is what we have for the collisional term. And now we can write down the full equation for our Boltzmann equation, including interactions between electrons and photons. And that's going to be good enough to describe the evolution of this photon distribution function for most of the history of the universe. So just transcribing from the left-hand side of the board, writing down what we have. About that A. I missed an A somewhere. So this is what we get for the evolution of the photon distribution function. And where that A came from, I have to admit, I don't know. So it canceled out here for sure, right?
Did you write the first CF for the proper time on the
moment? Yeah.
So if the first one is for the proper time, then you get an A.
But there's no derivatives in there with respect to either proper or conformal time. I guess that's why I'm a bit worried.
No, say when you change the left-hand side from the proper time to
This is, thank you very much. So this is df dt. Yeah. Indeed, thank you very much. So df d eta is going to be a times all that stuff. Yeah. That's exactly right. Okay, you're paying attention. Fantastic. So we have this guy here, which is the coefficient of this collisional terms. And we're going to define something called the optical depth. So the time derivative of the optical depth is going to be this number density of electrons times sigma t times A. So if we integrate this, then we can define things in such a way so that tau will have an integration constant that makes tau equal to 1 today. Okay, so that is the distribution, the evolution of the distribution function for photons. That's an extraordinarily important equation. It's going to tell us how to go from the distribution function in the early universe to the distribution function today. So are there any questions before I tell you or just quote how to evolve everything else in the universe from the past to today? Okay. So in the tutorial today, you guys will, by a slightly different method, by solving for the conservation of the stress energy tensor, derive what happens to perturbations in matter. Okay? So I'll quote the result that you will get in the non-relativistic limit here. So if we define, as I was starting to do, fluctuations in the density is a fractional over density. And if we assume that velocities are irrotational, so that in Fourier space we get something that just goes like a scalar times the direction of k, then we have these two definitions. So the matter can be defined, the perturbations in matter can be defined by the fractional overdensity and the perturbations in the velocity. We saw that yesterday. So the equations of motion you'll get for delta and v by solving conservation of stress energy, or one can also solve this Boltzmann equation, not for photons, but for massive particles. These are two equivalent ways of getting this result. We'll find that delta dot in Fourier space plus ikv, this irrotational velocity, is equal to negative 3 phi dot. And v, we have v dot plus a dot over a times v equals negative ik psi. So the way to source a density fluctuation in matter is to have a time-varying gravitational potential. And the way to source a velocity perturbation is to have a spatially varying gravitational potential. Okay. So this is matter. So we might want to split matter up into dark matter. And baryons. So dark matter doesn't interact with photons. Baryons do interact with photons. That's the distinction. So we can derive a similar set of equations for baryons. So for the density fluctuations in baryons, that's just the same. Baryons interact with gravity the same as dark matter. But the velocity perturbations are a little bit different, because when I have Compton scattering, it not only shuffles around the momenta of the photons, it also shuffles around the momenta of the electrons. So that means that whenever I have Compton scattering, I'm also going to have perturbations that are sourced in the velocity of baryons. So we've got the gravitational piece for baryons, but there's also a piece that has to do with Compton scattering. So using that definition of the optical depth that I have up there, and another quantity R, which is just 3 times the density in baryons today over 4 times the density in photons today. So that's just a convenient definition. We get something that looks like this. So it depends on the velocity of the baryons, and it also depends on the dipole seen by the baryons, the dipole in the photon fluid. So this, again, we won't have time to derive, but you can find a nice derivation of that in chapter 4 of Dodelson as well. So just quoting the result, this is what you get. So that's, we have photons, we have dark matter, we have baryons, and the only thing missing is the equations that tell me how the gravitational potentials evolve. And that we derived yesterday in class. So we can just quote the result, go to Fourier space. So we had one equation, which was this k squared phi plus 3 a dot over a phi dot minus psi a dot over a. And that was equal to 4 pi g a squared times t 0, 0. And we had another equation, which was in Fourier space ki kj times phi plus psi equals 4 pi g a squared t ij, I believe. Sorry, it was 8 pi, not 4. Okay. So what we need are t00 and tij. So we did that for matter yesterday. So t00 is just going to be negative rho for matter. And that is just the zeroth order piece times 1 plus delta, right? So we'll have this for dark matter. We'll have this for the baryons. And now we need the photons. So T00 for photons we can get by integrating the distribution function. So T00 for photons is just negative 2 because there's two helicity states for photons, times the integral d cubed p over 2 pi cubed times the energy of photons times f. And that, if we expand out f into a zeroth order and a first order piece, is just going to be negative rho gamma times 1 plus 4 theta. So it's not, so I guess I have made an assumption here. So here, I have this integral d cubed p. And so by the definition of the moments up there, if I integrate over the angular part of that integral, I'm just going to pick out the monopole. So I'm just going to pick out the average piece. Yeah. So this is theta 0 that appears here. OK, so then substituting that in, we have for t 0, 0 that this is minus rho gamma 1 plus 4 theta 0. So that's the t 0, 0 I need to stick into Einstein's equations. And now finally, we have this tij piece. So this is tij for I not equals to j. And this is sometimes called the anisotropic stress. So it's anisotropic stress because we're on the off diagonal. And this is like a pressure term, right? OK, so a convenient way to extract this for, so first of all, for cold dark matter and baryons, the anisotropic stress is 0. So we wrote down yesterday the perturbed energy momentum tensor. And you'll recall that the spatial part was totally diagonal. It was just proportional to delta ij. So the only way we're going to get anisotropic stress is from photons. And it turns out also neutrinos, because they're relativistic and act basically like photons for most of the universe, will also give rise to anisotropic stress. But relativistic particles generally will. So to get this guy out, we can do a trick, which is to project out a certain component of the energy momentum tensor. So if we act with a projection operator that goes like k hat I, k hat j, minus delta ij over 3, then this is going to pick out the longitudinal traceless part. So in fact, we don't even need to require that I naught equals j. We can just act with this projection operator, and it's going to pick out for us the off-diagonal piece. So anything that's proportional to a delta function, if we act with this operator on a delta function, then we're going to get k hat I, k hat I, that's a sum, minus delta ij, delta ij over 3. So that's a unit vector. That means this is 1. And that's a trace. So that means this is 3. So we're going to get 0. So this is just going to pick out for us the piece that's not proportional to delta ij. So we can do that. We can act this now on the energy momentum tensor. And this is going to give us, so 2, we can define this in terms of the distribution function as this integral d cubed p. And the anisotropic components of the stress energy would just be pi pj over p times f d cubed p. But now we act with this projection operator. So we've got k hat I, k hat j, minus delta ij over 3. And this, if we insert it here and use some of the definitions we had before, we can see is going to be equal to 2 times this integral d cubed p over 2 pi cubed times mu squared minus a third pf. So the mu squared came from k hat dot p, right? And then we have this magnitude down here, a magnitude squared. And that's why I've got a magnitude here, p. And so this thing is just proportional to the Legendre polynomial of, with L equals 2. And so using our definition of the moments up there, you can see that this is just equal to some proportionality constant, which it turns out is -8/3. And since we're defining, we can do the same thing. We can expand f. And here we're just going to get do I still have that up here? Yeah, so here we're just going to get a negative p df dp. So that's going to turn into a p squared df dp on theta. And so doing this out, what you'll find is that at the end, this simplifies to -8/3 rho, where rho is defined as above, times the quadrupole moments of theta. So that's T off diagonal ij. So finally, for Einstein's equations, plugging all of these definitions in, we're going to have k squared phi plus 3 a dot over a phi dot minus psi a dot over a equals 4 pi g a squared rho dark matter delta dark matter plus rho baryon delta baryon plus 4 rho gamma theta 2, or theta 0. So t 0, 0 just depended on the monopole. And then we have this other piece, which if we perform this same projection on the left-hand side of Einstein's equations, I'll just get a k squared. So I'll get k squared theta plus psi equals, now multiplying all of these constants together, 32 pi g a squared times rho gamma theta 2. So now we can step back and look at a nice weeks of work, because we now have all of the equations that are necessary to evolve perturbations in photons, perturbations in the metric, and perturbations in matter. So we have these equations here, Einstein's equations. Wrong one. We have these equations here, which tell us how matter evolves. And then finally, we have the one that I erased, which tells us how photons evolve. But that's worth writing again on the board, so let's write it down. So that one was just, so now my dots are going to mean conformal time derivatives. Ik mu theta plus d phi theta plus ik mu psi, and that all equaled tau dot negative tau dot theta 0 minus theta plus mu dv. Okay, and that's it. So using these equations, we can figure out, given some set of initial conditions, what happens to perturbations in everything that's in the universe. So gravity and all of its contents. So like anything else, that's not just trivial, but it takes some work to solve these equations. So today you'll look at a particular limit where everything is non-relativistic and you don't have any photons. And in that case, you just have fluctuations in matter and fluctuations in the gravitational potential. And if you look at things that happen on scales that are small compared to the horizon, you'll explore the phenomenology of what occurs. And what you'll find is sort of what you expect. Matter likes to clump. So there's a gravitational instability. But if there's a pressure associated with this matter, then it will not like to clump too much. So dark matter is totally pressureless, but baryons will get a pressure. The reason that baryons have pressure is because they interact with photons. So this is going to be the term that gives us an effective pressure for the fluids that fill the universe. And tomorrow, we will basically derive the acoustic oscillations that occur in this baryon-photon fluid. And those acoustic oscillations are extremely important because those are the reason that when we plot this famous plot, which I promise you eventually we will get to and understand, that's why we see these acoustic oscillations in the CMB. So those are basically some projection of the photon fluid. Recall that this thing here is basically just the power in those temperature fluctuations, so the power in those fluctuations in theta. So if theta undergoes these acoustic oscillations, then that's going to show up here in what we see today in the CMB. So the baryons and dark matter, well, not the dark matter because it couples through the gravitational potential, but the other stuff in the universe also undergoes these acoustic oscillations. So if we go out and survey galaxies, that's another way of seeing these acoustic oscillations. And in fact, that's a really nice tool for cosmology, because as we saw in the first class or second class, if I have a standard ruler, I can use things like the angular diameter distance to probe what happened in the intervening time with the scale factor. So that's a taste of where we're going. I hope by next Wednesday we are basically through this. So you should by next Wednesday understand the phenomenology of the power spectrum of the CMB. I think that's not too ambitious. And then starting Thursday morning next week, we'll start talking about inflation, which is what gives rise to the initial conditions that you're going to have to shove into these equations. So philosophically, just think. So these are evolution equations, right? These are differential equations. And they're meaningless without an initial condition. So what gives you the right initial conditions to explain those plots? And we'll see that sort of our best working theory of what gives you those right initial conditions is this theory called inflation. And then we'll explore that in detail.
Will the constant scattering distort the blackbody radiation?
No, and the reason it won't is because to a good approximation, Compton scattering doesn't really change the magnitude of the momentum of photons, but only the direction. So Compton scattering in this non-relativistic limit is pretty elastic. That's right, but then those highly relativistic So that you're right, that will somewhat distort things. But at late times, it will basically just all come into equilibrium. That's a good question, actually. I need to think about that a little bit more to give you a better answer. So any other questions before we break for the day? OK. Okay, if not, then I'll see you tomorrow.